This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're now entering Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge. And now, here are your hosts, Roger Morissette, Chad Campbell, Andrew Flanagan, Jeff Machado, and Keith Schmidt.
Come on, girl. Yeah. It's me, Jackie Murray. Give me that look. That's right. Let's get sweaty. Let's get real sweaty. I'm talking rainforest sweaty. I'm talking swamp sweaty. Let's fill a bathtub full of sweat. All right.
Daddy, who wants to love me sexy?
Hello, folks. Welcome to the Sports Lounge. It's been a while here. We've, life gets in the way for your favorite loungers. So it's been, I think it's been about a month. A lot has happened in the last month. I'm your host, the Cowboy. Loving being back in the lounge here. The music's on. The cigar smoke is thick. The couch is nice and comfy. A lot more comfy than my car, which is where I feel like I spend all my time these days. So it's fantastic to be back in the lounge. Bit of a crazy day to be back in the lounge too, as news of the Deflategate report, the Wells report, came out today. So we're going to talk about that. Big boxing match over the weekend. For you loyal PTBNers, I made an appearance on the Kevin Kelly Show a couple nights ago. To give my take on the fight. We're going to talk more in depth about that. We're going to talk about the NBA playoffs. And we're also going to talk about Major League Baseball. As of now, I'm just joined by one person here. He's a regular. He's on my case a lot about not being in the lounge enough. But I know he's a busy guy, too. But no one I prefer to share the lounge with more than him. Mi padre, my father, Cowboy Senior. How you doing, Cowboy Senior?
Hey, I'm doing good. It's been a while. It's good. It's great to be back. And you're right. A lot has gone on. It's been a while, and my God, we got a lot of subjects we could touch on. That's for sure.
Absolutely. You're looking nice and relaxed over there, Cowboy Senior. You happy to be back in?
Yeah. I'm feeling nice and relaxed. This is great. I miss this. We gotta get you back in form, Cowboy.
Absolutely. So, Cowboy Senior, do you have a big vacation coming up, or did that already happen?
No, I got a big vacation coming up. I'll probably be missing next week because, kind of like Julian Edelman said after the Super Bowl, I'm going to Disney World.
I don't know if that park's big enough to hold you, Cowboy Senior.
There we go. Hey, look out, Mickey, here I come.
Head the size of the castle after the after the Patriots' victory, but...
How sweet it was.
Little shine off the luster today, man. Little shine off the luster. So for those who don't know, we're taping this on a Wednesday. It's about 7:30 Eastern. About 5 or 6 hours ago, the Wells report was released. And I believe the language, in essence, the language in the headline, the language in the report said... The Patriots probably, or specifically Tom Brady, more likely than not, knew about, possibly orchestrated, the deflating of the footballs. They have text messages between the couple of locker room guys that are pretty damning. Word came out Brady refused to turn his phone over. It's 200-something page report, which I have not gotten to read the full extent of yet. But the abridged version is the report finds that the deflating was done intentionally, and that Tom Brady was less than truthful with the investigators, and in turn, clearly less than truthful up at the podium the week before the Super Bowl when he denied any knowledge of any. Of any wrongdoing, the report states that Brady lied to Belichick. I mean, in essence, states that Brady said the same thing to Belichick that he said to the fans and to the investigators, that he had no knowledge of this. Not a great look. Not a great look. So I've seen the range of emotions today, the range of opinions. You have the one side, which is kind of the who cares opinion. You have the other side. I have the privilege of having a lively Facebook discussion with an individual who felt that Tom Brady should be suspended for a full season, and specifically called out that it should be. You know, Greg Hardy got 10 games, and Brady should get more since the American judicial system decided not to prosecute Greg Hardy. So that's the other side of the coin. You know, personally, I don't want to say I fall in the middle, because that's not the middle. But, I mean, clearly something was done, you know, even if Kraft came out, he blasted the report, but said, you know, we're bound by this and we'll take whatever punishment we get. What that punishment should be, I don't think should be a full season or anything. I kind of, you know, what I said in the Facebook post, and Senior, you can tell me how you feel about this analogy, is I equate this to somebody faking an injury against the Eagles to slow down the Chip Kelly offense. It's not great. It's certainly a little, you know, it's not within the rules per se, but how big of a deal is it? You know, if you want to suspend Tom Brady for one game because it happened in the AFC title game, you know, take a mid-round pick, something like that. You know, I really don't have a problem with that. I mean, all 32 teams in the league are bound by these investigations, and it's part of the deal. The investigation found that he was, in essence, guilty. So that would be, that would be where I would stand. I mean, I personally think it should be treated just as the crowd noise thing in Atlanta was treated, which is, believe this, you know, a draft pick, maybe a fine, call it a day. But if they want to suspend him for the Steelers game, so be it. I think you're just going to have a pissed off Brady that, you know, maybe it propels him to another ring. But where are you at with this, Senior?
Well, you know, as minor an infraction as this would be, still. How long did it take Wells? It was months that he's been working on this, and interviewing all these people and all this evidence. This guy's a great investigator with a heavily paid team, and he still can't say he's definitely proven anything. In fact, he can't say he's proven anything. This more probably than not statement. I heard a legal expert on the radio today say that the reason that Wells used that language is because that language is used in civil suits. So it was a legal kind of way to say this. You know, that you couldn't use that language in a criminal investigation because you have to prove guilt in that case. You know, you're innocent until proven guilty. But in a civil suit, it's a little different. And when that language is used, he said the judge would instruct that what that means is that basically if you took an old-fashioned scale with, you know, each side beam with each side and piled up the evidence on one side and in favor and the evidence on the other side and the other one, that the tables would be tipped 51% or more to the side that you're saying more probably than not. This is the best they could do. And here's some of the things. Everybody who's talking about it is saying the most damning, quote, circumstantial evidence they have are these text messages that Jastrzemski, I mean, it's an easy name to remember, even though it's a weird name because it rhymes with a pretty famous guy, Jastrzemski, and the other guy's
McNally.
Name is McNally is more common, yeah, exchanged. If you look at them and one of the things was they were real. There's a lot of F bombs. There's a lot of fuck toms in it. And there's one of them where they were really, that Brady was absolutely infuriated with them because the balls that were in the game were at 16 and a half pounds. I mean, so there's nothing wrong with him being infuriated about that. I mean, they'd be legal at 12 and a half. So I don't see where him being real pissed off about that, and they're saying to each other, you know, if he thought 16 and a half pounds was bad, wait until the next game. These are going to be rugby balls and all this. And even if you think that some of these messages suggest that Brady tells them to deflate, to have the balls not even up to 12 and a half, even if you want to take that stance, which maybe you can, I don't think that's a big deal. Because basically, if the ball's under 12 and a half and the officials do what they're supposed to do and check it before the game, there's no penalty for that. All they do is get a pump and get them up to 12 and a half. It's not even as bad as an offside. It's nothing. They just fix it. And they have nothing in those conversations or anywhere. There's nothing anywhere that has Brady, anybody quoting Brady or in any other way saying that they should tamper with the balls after the referees have checked them, which would be the issue. Nothing. They have nothing saying that at all. They got McNally bringing the balls with him in the bathroom for 30 seconds or whatever when he's going to the men's room on his way out. That's it. You know, if you're going to say we're putting two and two together and saying that means that Tom told them to deflate them after they check them, I don't know. And you could even carry out the possibility in your mind that, okay, Brady's so adamant telling them that he wants them, the balls, to be, you know, how he likes them, and he likes them without a lot of air in them, and that maybe to be, even though these guys don't seem to like Tom too much, but maybe to be good soldiers, you could definitely reach a conclusion that they take it upon themselves to, hey, if, just in case the officials pump them back up, we'll try and take a little air out for Tom. And even that, there'd be nothing saying that he said to do that. So I don't know how they can justify giving him any major punishment for this. I can't see how it should be anything more than a fine. And this is totally isn't the way you should be considering the argument, but you kind of know that Goodell has to look at all facets. I mean, he's managing a league that is on the top rung in America, in American sports. One of their biggest nights of the year is that opening night. And it's the Pats and the Steelers. If you suspend Brady for one game, you already don't have Le'Veon Bell and LeGarrette Blount playing in that game because of their weed thing, their weed suspension. And now you're going to have the biggest night of the year, well, one of the biggest nights of the year, the big opening Thursday night, and you're not going to have Tom Brady out there either because of this ridiculous thing, which, again, when they throw this, I mean, who knows how much money they spent on this investigation and everything else, and they still don't have any hard evidence. So, I mean, I think no matter what, I think it's a big joke. I think it's way over the top to suspend someone for this, that a couple of PSIs in a ball is that much of an advantage. Little things are done to gain advantages all the time. I mean, like we said, is it worse than piping crowd noise into a stadium? Nobody's getting suspended for that, you know. So, I don't know.
I think the difference there,
to compare it to the Greg Hardy thing, is an absolute joke.
Yeah, or the Ray Rice. I mean, it's absurd, some of the stuff I've seen.
I mean, people that are saying stuff like that are the haters, you know. And I know now this is all they need is a little bit of fodder, and we're going to hear from these idiots like Marshall Faulk again and stuff. I don't even want to listen to them. I think it's part of the price you pay for being the most successful franchise in the NFL, is that any little thing is brought under the microscope to the point of ridiculous. And this as big a deal as this has been made out of, is completely ridiculous. So, and again, and even with everything they did, this big a deal they made out of it, they still can't definitively prove anything. And you think they might suspend Tom Brady? That's completely off the charts as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I mean, I think he might get a game.
If he gets a game, that would be
And I don't think it's necessarily for the ball deflation. I think it's for the because the one difference between Atlanta and Cleveland is that they fessed up to it. He went on national TV and presumably lied about it. So,
well, you're going to say he lied about it. They haven't proven anything. So how can we say he lied?
Right.
You know, he said he didn't do anything he shouldn't do. If he didn't tell them to doctor the balls after the referees checked them, as far as I'm concerned, he didn't do anything wrong. Every single quarterback in the league goes through this whole thing with balls, and how they prefer them. And I don't have a problem with it. Nobody would. What would be wrong would be after the referees have checked them and put them in a bag and, okay, these are ready for the game, tampering with them then. And they haven't even come close to proving that. The only thing close to proof of that, they have balls into the bathroom. I mean, come on. Deflate all those balls and reinflate them in the 35 seconds or whatever that they had him in there. He's a real talented guy, So, I don't know. I think, obviously whatever decision Goodell makes is, he's a guy who's at this point and very damn well should be with the way he botched up the Ray Rice thing and mostly everything else he touches, is he's probably worried about his job, and he's got to do whatever he can that's going to make him look good. And I don't know which way that's going to fall. I mean, don't you think it's kind of embarrassing for the NFL on draft night that every single time the commissioner comes up to the podium to announce a pick, they're booing the living shit out of him? I mean, it looked awful, he's got a lot of ways an easy job. I mean, he's got the most successful sport in the world that he's the commissioner of. It's a beautiful job, and he manages to botch it up every chance he gets. So he's definitely concerned about him and his image, and whatever decision he makes that is going to be driven by that.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a great point, Senior, and that's another reason why I think it'll be a game. Because if you give him two, that's the same as Ray Rice, and you can't, or initially.
Yeah.
And you can't do that, right? If you give him nothing, well, now you're cozying up to your buddy Kraft, which is the other narrative, right? So, I mean, again, I don't have a huge problem with one game. It's one game, I don't have a huge problem with that. I don't have a huge problem with a fine if they decide to go that route instead, or a mid-round pick. That's fine. But, clearly the report clearly found, if you read the report, they're basically, the report says, we believe Tom Brady lied. And, would it hold up in court? No, because it's circumstantial.
We believe he lied, but we can't prove it.
Right.
Through all this investigating, well, all this time into a silly thing about the inflation of balls, and we still can't prove it.
I don't want to, I don't want to make a bigger deal out of this, but, I mean, the fact that Brady wouldn't give them his phone, I mean, that's why not? Right, the other two guys did, and presumably if Brady gave them his phone, maybe he had some text messages on there, And I mean, it's his right not to give him the phone, but he's not in a criminal court. It's not, they don't have a burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. It's not jail or anything like that. It's an NFL-led investigation. So this is what the investigation found, and Kraft said so much. We'll take whatever punishment is doled out, and it's not gonna be severe. I don't think. I don't consider one game severe. So,
but if you got to look, if you look at Kraft's entire statement, I mean, you can't just take that one part of it out of context.
Oh, he blasted him.
He's just completely disgusted with the whole thing, and he totally disagrees with everything that they found. But he's saying basically to be, the fact that we have no recourse, what are we going to do? So we're one of 32 teams. We'll accept whatever you guys throw at us. But
right.
I don't
I mean, you gotta think that he knew about this before 2 o'clock today, right? And
well, I'm sure he did.
I think that response was crafted in such a way, no pun intended, crafted in such a way to stand behind his franchise guy, stick up for Tom, and also be a company man at the same time. You know, and that's fine. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what he should do. You know,
and also, do we really want to drag this? I mean, I don't know what recourse we would have, but do we really want to drag this stupid thing out? It's already gone too far, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, I hear things about, well, now there's another asterisk and all that. So the one thing I can say not even as a Patriots fan, but as an analyst, right, is better that they caught it the week before he lit up the best defense of the last 20 years to win to win Super Bowl number four than during that game, right? So there's no,
they won by so many points. It didn't matter. It didn't matter if there was no footballs.
There's no question that the after the craziness that was Deflategate going into the Super Bowl, there's no question that those balls were inflated properly and he threw them pretty well.
And now. The other thing that I think the NFL, the fact that they made this big a deal out of this, it's probably going to end up infuriating a lot of quarterbacks, probably almost every quarterback in the NFL, because I think they're going to have to totally change the procedure, and I don't think they're going to let quarterbacks do it, you know, scuff their balls up and do all these things that they want, preparing them themselves like they all do. And
everybody just gets a brand new ball. That's it.
It may not be brand new, you know, maybe worn down a little at all, but I think the NFL should, you know, they're just going to take care of the balls.
Right. They're not going to, the balls
aren't
coming. It
would look foolish if they didn't, no.
Yeah, the balls don't come from the teams anymore. They supply the balls, and that's
right.
That.
I mean, if you're going to suspend the best quarterback in football for this, then, you know, I think you got to, and it's been blown so far out of proportion, I think that's a step they have to take. And then, you know, so then the league looked bad in other ways. You know, you had this guy that was selling balls for autographs. They found all these other different things, too. You know, then that was a league official. So, you know, he's stealing balls from the games and selling them. So, I mean, that stuff is worse than a pound of PSI or whatever the hell it is, you know. Anyway.
Right. Like I said, do you think that's a decent analogy? It's like when one of the Cowboys guys grabs his hamstring during the Philly game. It's illegal, right? And it's dishonest. He's lying about that injury, but it happens all the time. It happens so much that against Philly that the fans boo the injured people because they know it's bullshit. You know, and
it's hard to mix sports, but another good analogy is it's like Michael Pineda putting pine tar on the baseball. Big freaking deal. You know? Whatever, a guy throwing a spitball. You know, it's doctoring up the ball, you know? Certain catchers used to sharpen their shin guard and gouge the ball and all that. You know, it's just...
Or stick them. It's just like stick them. Stick them was always illegal, and those guys would cover their whole bodies with it.
Right. I mean, yeah, the whole Jerry Rice would talk like anything about the Patriots, and then they showed that video of him and couldn't stick them all over him and over himself when it was illegal, and saying, yeah, I know, you know, there was on video from him in the past. So, you know, all these idiots, I mean, it's true in all sports, football. You don't even have to go to as big a time as Major League. People do little things to gain an edge. You know, people bend the rules a little to gain an edge in any sport. There was the talk that Chicago Bulls used to, remember that they used to loosen the rims in Chicago State.
In baseball, when you get
to swing. Michael Jordan's shooting percentage. The Celtics used to set up the Lakers locker room at about 120 degrees. You know,
and then in baseball, you have when you're playing against a speedy guy, you let the grass grow a little on the infield.
That's right. The Royals, when they used to have those really fast teams that I remember in the past, the Willie Wilson-led, you know, teams, that they said that the ground in front of home plate was literally like concrete, so that when they hit those choppers, the ball would bounce up in the air high and they'd get the infield hits. You'd knock to your field. There's little things done to gain an edge everywhere, and this is no different than anything like that, but we're going to make a huge deal out of it. It's totally ridiculous. if you could compare it to real life, it's probably the equivalent. If he gets suspended for a game, it's the equivalent of throwing someone in jail for a couple of weeks for rolling through a stop sign. You know, that's why I think
I'm happy you went with that one, senior.
Suspension is a ridiculous.
That's a better analogy than we've heard in the past here on the lounge. But I agree. The one thing I'll say, and the one thing I think, you know, not that Tom would probably ever come on the lounge, but if I had him sitting here in the lounge on the couch next to me and asked him honestly, if he had one thing to do over with this whole thing, I think he would have just come clean before the Super Bowl, you know, and just said exactly what you said, senior, is, yeah, I like the ball. I like the ball as underinflated as possible. I give it to the refs. Maybe it's underinflated. It's their job to blow it back up and put it all on them instead of playing dumb. And he told the investigators he didn't even know McNally's name, and he didn't know who he was, and had never spoken to him or didn't know his job, which they were able to, through other means, piece together that wasn't true. But I think if he had it to do over, that and it might have been an initial fib he told Belichick, and that Belichick ran with, and then he had no choice. If you remember that press conference, I mean, he looked more uncomfortable than I've ever seen him in front of a camera, and it's probably because he wasn't being 100% forthcoming. But, you know, the punishment will be what it is, and I can guarantee it won't be the whole season. So whatever they throw at him, I think the longer it is, the more pissed off he'll be when he comes back. The Deflategate stuff, I firmly believe, helped the Patriots win that Super Bowl. Gave the Patriots that us against the world mentality that sometimes a team needs, or definitely helps the motivation, helps you practice a little bit harder. You know what I mean, senior?
Yep.
So
no,
you know,
no,
give them four games, and those last 12 are going to be something else.
if they give them one, you know, we could say it would be pretty cool to kick the Steelers' ass with Jimmy Garoppolo playing quarterback.
Yeah. Oh, we know which way you'll be. You know, regardless of who's behind your center, we know who your prediction will be to win that game.
I could pick it right now. Yeah. But that us against the world mentality is something that our Patriot champions of the past always use. You know, Rodney Harrison was the best with it. And I think he was a team leader and got everyone to buy into it. I mean, they'd play a game, you know, in a playoff game that they're favored by like a touchdown or 8 points, and they'd win, and he'd come on the interview after. Nobody gave us a chance. They all said we couldn't do it. Nobody believed in this team. We showed them all. And he'd get everybody to buy into that. And, yeah, you're right. This definitely might have rallied the troops. So, yeah, if the worst case, and I don't think they could possibly go any worse than suspending him for a game, if that's the worst case scenario and it helped us win a Super Bowl and we lose Tom for one regular season game, you know, BFD. You know,
exactly. That's my feeling. It just goes away and is what it is. Let's move on, senior. I think we basically agreed on that one, which is good. So fight weekend, big fight on Saturday night, fight of the century, Floyd Mayweather Jr. putting his undefeated perfect record on the line, along with multiple welterweight championship belts against Manny Pac-Man Pacquiao, in what was dubbed the fight of the century. So, senior, not a big boxing guy anymore. Introduced me to the sport. I think we've talked about this on here, but introduced me to the sport back in the day, back in the Tyson, Sugar Ray Leonard, Hagler days, and I kept it going. I mean, I'm a boxing junkie, always have been. Senior, you know, with senior's busy life and, you know, senior's more of a college sports guy than I am. I enjoy my college sports, but senior is a college sports junkie. He doesn't leave a lot of time for boxing, unfortunately. But I had a party over here, over at the Cowboys Ranch in beautiful Somerset, Massachusetts. About 30 people crammed in. We had some pizza. We had some PTBNers. We had Justin and Andy, who couldn't make it tonight, but we'll be back next time on the lounge. We had some of my old friends. We had family. It was a good time. It was a good time. And then the fight itself happened, which, to the boxing purist, where I think I might have been the only one in the house, wasn't the most entertaining fight in the world, and certainly the guy I wanted to win didn't win. But Floyd Mayweather's really good. He's really, really good at what he does, which is hit and not be hit, the sweet science. A lot of frustration from folks. So the problem with these fights, Senior, when there's these things dubbed the fight of the century, is that you get people who don't really know boxing, particularly a lot of talking heads on TV, people who don't really know boxing, haven't followed boxing, expecting things that aren't going to happen. You know, as soon as Skip Bayless and Stephen A. start weighing in on boxing, it's in trouble. So this fight was billed as the fight that could save boxing. And as someone who's watched all of Floyd Mayweather's fights, basically, I could have told you, at best, Pacquiao would have outthrown him 2-1. They would have landed about the same amount of punches, and Pacquiao could have taken a decision. At worst is what we got, which is what basically, you know, with a few exceptions, what all Mayweather fights are like, which is he completely neutralizes the other guy's offense and hits you just enough to win without taking any chances. And so that wasn't the fight to save. Boxing doesn't need to be saved, first off. If you're into action fights, there's a lot of good action fighters that you can watch. Floyd Mayweather Jr. is not one of them. Never has been, never will be. But what was your take on it, Senior? I know you from being away for a while. I know you and I had spoken a little bit before, so I don't think you were completely shocked that it wasn't a slobber knocker. But, we sat next to each other. Why don't you give the lounge faithful your take?
Yeah, okay, to say I'm not a boxing purist, I used to love boxing, and I mean, I go, you talked where I introduced you, but I obviously go back way further than that. My first memories of boxing was a young Cassius Clay knocking out Sonny Liston, and I followed Muhammad Ali's career and some of the greatest fights you'll ever see, and basically I was following the whole boxing world in that time, all the way up to the Tyson era. And then I lost interest, but this was the first fight I watched in a while because, the interest drew me in and everything else. And, basically it was kind of a boring fight, but, you would tune me in on what to expect. I expected more out of Manny. But, here's my take on Mayweather. And it's, I only watched him one fight, but, I read and I listen and I know what I saw. People have told me, the way this guy fights, people don't like him. Not only because of his personal side, but as a boxer, people don't like him because they say it's not entertaining. A Floyd Mayweather fight isn't entertaining because he doesn't stand in there. It never turns into a brawl. He gets ahead. He gets on his bicycle. He fights great defense. He wins. There's no doubt he won that fight clearly. He completely dominated the fight. And I say, okay, and again, I'm going to put the personal stuff aside, but as a boxer and as an entertainer and as his name, Money, he's a real smart guy. He's not taking a beating. He's not going to have his brain scrambled when he's done because he doesn't get hit. He wins. Isn't that the idea? Isn't that your goal when you go out there is to win? He's a great boxer. He wins. And to all the people that say, well, his fight's not entertaining, why does he have to worry about that? If they're not entertaining, he just made more money than any fighter in history ever made on a fight. They're still selling. If people are going to say, well, I'm not going to show interest in Mayweather. It's not good. His type of fight isn't good. It still sells. So he's winning on all counts. And that fight there. He was a great technician. He just fought a great fight. Pacquiao, people were saying isn't, I mean, is the shoulder injury thing, but we didn't know it that night. I'm going to put that aside because I don't know. I don't know how much of an effect that had it, but, you know, everybody was saying, I mean, you included, I expected Manny to throw more punches. I expected Manny to throw more punches. But basically, every time he got off first, he was eating a nice crisp corner right hand to the, somewhere in his face by Mayweather. And so I think he got to the point where, you know, it's hard to keep getting off first when you know you're going to eat that right hand every time you do. So, yeah, the guy was great. There's no doubt about it. Doesn't mean it's action back. No, it wasn't action back. But how can you knock what he's doing? The one knock against him is that, well, he's not going to draw interest because the fight's not action fights. Well, he drew plenty of interest, and he's obviously made money all along. So, you know, again, putting aside the personal stuff, what's there to knock? You agree with that?
Oh, of course. And, you know, the funny thing is that the personal stuff is said, and I don't want to say funny, it's maybe sad. And the personal stuff is probably half the reason he makes the money that he does. So I don't know who said it. Maybe it was Don King. Doesn't matter why they're tuning in, as long as they're tuning in. And
there you go.
You have a Floyd Mayweather fight. He's got the perfect record. And half the people buying the fight are buying the fight to watch a master craftsman at work. The other half are hoping to see the woman beater get his, you know. And either way, you want to be tuned in, right? You don't want to miss it when he loses. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And
I guess you can answer better than me on this, though. Everybody's hoping that he gets his. Is there anybody out there that can give him his?
Well, he said he's only going to fight once more. I think it'll be twice because I think he's going to fight in September. He's probably going to fight. My guess would be he'll fight Danny Garcia coming up in weight from 140. No chance. I mean, Danny Garcia is a good fighter, but he's got no chance. I mean, Mayweather, for all intents and purposes, has cleaned out, you know, the divisions. His last few fights have been the toughest. Like, Canelo Alvarez was a guy who probably had the best shot of the last, you know, last 5 years or so to beat him. Because young kid, 22, undefeated, bigger, naturally a lot bigger than Mayweather. Like, he could fight at middleweight. And Mayweather beat him soundly. It was the same kind of deal where, you know, why isn't the kid trying to bully him? Why isn't the kid throwing more punches? And, you know, Mayweather just takes that from you. The guys that have done best against him are guys without I don't want to say unskilled, but less skilled come forward brawlers. Like he fought Marcos Maidana a couple of years ago in their first fight. And, you know, this is the blueprint for me to beating Mayweather is Maidana's got a chin. He's got a really, really good chin, so he doesn't give a shit if he gets hit. And he literally just kept his face right in Mayweather's chest for 12 rounds and just threw and threw and threw. And he hit his, you know, he hit his arms. He hit his chest. He hit his hips. He hit him in the balls a few times. Barely hit him in the head. Hit him in the head a few times. But that's and one of the one judge scored that fight ajar, and the other two had Mayweather winning 8-4. But that kind of guy is the kind of guy that can give him trouble. And there's really not that kind of guy out there right now in his weight class. If he were to really go for the gusto and move up to middleweight, which I don't think he has to do, but if he really wanted to, you know, he calls himself the best ever. If you want to prove that, there's a guy at middleweight, Gennady Golovkin, Triple G, they call him, who's, you know, 20-something knockouts in a row. No one can last 6-7 rounds with him. And, I mean, it's not just that he's a face-first brawler. He's a good boxer. He's naturally bigger than Mayweather. And he's undefeated. I think Golovkin would beat him because of the size difference. But at his weight class, no way. So, I mean, so he'll fight Danny Garcia in my prediction. Danny Garcia next. And then he's going to fight Pacquiao again because of this rotator cuff thing. So, Pacquiao.
You think people will buy into that?
Definitely. I mean, let's say, well, I mean, you know, let's say 1/3 of the people buy into it. You know, they're still, Mayweather. Well, in the rematch, Mayweather should command about 80% of the purse instead of 60, I would think. You know, he'll still make $90, $100 million.
To be fair,
if Pacquiao truly had a torn rotator cuff before the fight, I mean, you know, that could, he didn't fight like himself. And to your point, my thought was and still is that, you know, he Pacquiao got knocked cold about four fights ago versus Juan Manuel Marquez. Knocked, like, I mean, it looked like he was, like, dead in the ring. He was out for 2 minutes. And I think he was afraid after feeling those right hands. And it looked like Mayweather got his attention a few times, that if he went whirlwind and he went and, you know, reckless abandon, that he would have gotten knocked out. And I think he would have gotten knocked out. But if you watch any other Manny Pacquiao fight other than that one, I mean, the guy he's the best offensive fighter of this generation, and it's not really close. I mean, he's, you know, faster than everybody else, footwork, punches from weird angles, huge power. The fact that, I mean, even if the rotator cuff was a mess, the fact that Mayweather neutralized him like that is so, so impressive. It's something that literally no one had even come close to doing. The fights Pacquiao lost, he lost the one by knockout to Marquez, and then he's had some close fights, but he's won them on activity, you know? I mean, he always knocks guys down. So it was just a virtuoso performance by Floyd.
And I had the feeling. There were a couple of times where Floyd got a little aggressive and Pacquiao really looked like he didn't know how to handle it. I had the feeling, I know there's no reason for Floyd to take the chance, and he's way too smart, too. But if he would have really went after him, I'd say there's about an 80-90% chance he would have knocked him out.
Yeah, there is
no reason for him to risk the 10%. Chance that when you walk into a clinch, you know, I think he could have knocked him out if he really wanted to.
Therein lies people's issue with Mayweather.
Right, but he's happy to win. I mean, there was, the way he fought, there was no way he could lose.
Yeah, I'm with you. Right. I'm with you, Senior. And Rob Carpenter, our you know, friend of the podcast, Rob and I had a good little back and forth after the fight, and he's in agreement as well. He called the fight beforehand. He told me what he thought and what he thought absolutely happened. And yeah, but if you're, you know, if you're someone that's doesn't, I mean, see, you were a big boxing person, so you know boxing. You get a lot of people who don't know boxing watching that fight, and you know, they hear fight of the century and they expect it to be like a Rocky movie. And generally speaking, your best fighters aren't like a Rocky movie. Particularly Mayweather is very much safety first. The thing is, I mean, I think he's got it in him. It's never gotten brought out because he's never really had to. But I think he's got it in him where if he had to, you know, if he had to engage in one of those wars, I think he's got the firepower to do it. And that's the other frustrating thing for fans is that they feel like we've never really seen Floyd's best because he's never really had to do it.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to get somebody in there that could bring it out in him, but with two fights left, it's probably not going to happen. I want to draw it's not a comparison, it's more of a contrast, and I thought about this after that fight. One of my favorite fighters of all time, and not that he was one of the greatest fighters of all time, just one of my favorites. He was a local guy, and his fights were always can't miss him, Vinny Pazienza. His flaw was, if you want to call it a flaw, was what Mayweather has that makes him great. Vinny was a good boxer. He wasn't the boxer that Mayweather is, but he was a good boxer. And in quite a few of his fights, he fought guys that he could have just stood on the outside, and he would at the beginning of the fight. And that's what his corner was telling him to do, box him, Vinny, box him, and just pick him apart. No problem. And if the guy tried to get him into a brawl, Vinny couldn't resist. Eventually standing toe-to-toe, he was a macho, tough guy, and he just had to do it. And he probably would have had more wins in his career. He would have taken a lot less shots, but he couldn't resist getting into the brawl. And that's part of what the allure was. That's why I would never miss of any fight, because they were all really action-packed. Probably his greatest, you know, for anybody who's listening who never saw Vinny, and you can YouTube things or whatever, find a way to see him. He fought a series of fights against a guy named Greg Hogan, who was a real tough, tough kid, a real tough guy. And they were some of the greatest fights you'll ever see in your life. And if Vinny would have wanted to just box him, he would have beat him easy. Hogan had no chance. He didn't have the reach. He didn't have enough boxing skill to go with him. But they turned into these epic fights because Hogan was so tough. And Vinny would get drawn in, and they were just wars. And so you look at that and you say, well, that's part of why Vinny's fights drew. That's why, you know, for one thing, he was the local guy around here, but you didn't want to miss him. And, you know, I used to think they say they knock Vinny for that, but I say it's a good thing. It's part of why I want to watch him all the time. But, you know, Mayweather's proven that, you know, if you stand back and box and win all the time, probably people are going to want to watch it too. So
here's the thing.
The way you're looking at it.
Here's the thing with that is for every Floyd Mayweather, okay, there are a lot of other guys who are really, really, really good safety-first boxers, but not – I mean, Floyd Mayweather is the best at what he does in the world, and there's no question about that. He's, I mean, like head and shoulders above anybody else at what he does in the world. The third best boxer – stand on the outside boxer, maybe even the second best stand on the outside boxer, is a guy named Guillermo Rigondeaux. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
Yep, so a Cuban amateur standout, defected, came here. He's undefeated. He beat Nonito Donaire, who was a top five pound-for-pound guy. That fight was on HBO. He defended his title twice on HBO. No one leaves a glove on this guy. Nobody. HBO dropped him because no one watched his fights. No one watched his fights. Now he's, he's on undercards. He's 30-something years old, and you know, so the path to the money is the Vinny Pazienza, Arturo Gatti, Mickey Ward. Those guys. Those are the guys that maybe the skills. You know, Vinny Pazienza is a good boxer. He's not Floyd Mayweather. Arturo Gatti was a good boxer. He could win a lot of fights on the outside. Not Floyd Mayweather. Those guys became millionaires and became legends because of their blood and guts mentality, because their fights were must-see TV. So if you're an up-and-coming boxer, it really behooves you for the to be exciting. And Mayweather is the exception and not the rule in that respect, in that his persona outside the ring is so larger than life. And he's got the O. He's got the undefeated record. And he's a carnival barker. He sells his fights not based on what happens in the ring. Everybody knows what's going to happen in the ring. He sells his fights based on that persona. There's a lot of guy, you know, and unless you're him or another, you know, the only other close comparison to that's Bernard Hopkins, and his fights are terrible to watch if you're an action fan. His fights have zero action, but he does the same thing. Completely neutralizes the other guy, wins a decision. He does it at 45, 50 years old, and that's why people tune in. So unless you're literally the best, literally the single best at that, and you have the personality to match, or you're doing it at a geriatric age, or you have some other, you know, some other selling point, no one's going to watch you fight. Whereas a guy like Arturo Gatti, limited skills, you know, filled up Boardwalk Hall and is, you know, he's dead now, but he was, you know, his trilogy with Mickey Ward from Lowell, you know, the guy they based the fighter on. You have two guys who weren't really barely in the top 10 in their division, and their first fight was so good that they each made over $1 million on pay-per-view in their second and third fights, just because people wanted to see the blood and guts, wanted to see, you know, because boxing at its core, there's nothing like a real like those Hogan Pazienza fights, senior. There's no singular sporting event that will excite you and that will show you resolve. That will show you how the fuck are these guys doing this? How are they doing it? It will have you out of your seat than a boxing match like that. Now you're gonna have to watch 30 shitty fights to get to that one. But the reason I'm such a big fan is that one. I mean, I remember exactly where I was during Gotti and Ward 1. I remember exactly where I was during Corrales Castillo 1. And you just say, oh my God, how are they even standing up? How are they even standing up? And it's just, when they mesh like that, it's incredible. You're never going to get that from a Floyd fight.
In my day, it would have been Hearns Hagler, you know, the greatest four rounds in the history of boxing, or... No, in my mind, the greatest fight of all time, because they were heavyweights doing that to each other, the Thriller in Manila, you know, Ali and Frazier. I mean,
they were old too.
Muhammad was. He stood toe to toe. You know,
They had the built-in narrative with Frazier coming off losses. Ali's just giving him a payday. Frazier, you know, I think the narrative going into that fight was, you know, Frazier was coming off the big losses to Foreman. And I think the narrative going into that fight was, oh, Ali's just helping him out. And, you know, Frazier will be lucky to last three rounds. And to see Frazier blind, literally blind in both eyes at the end of the fight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I can't imagine watching that live. I watch the special, you know, the documentaries on it, and it gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, definitely. You're right. There's no better event. There's no better event than a fight like that. I totally agree with you. I mean, you won't get that from Floyd, but you can. If you go in expecting it, you're going to be disappointed. But if you appreciate a boxer, he's beautiful to watch. No doubt about it. No doubt, the guy is really highly skilled.
Yeah, I mean
it's easy to hate him and root against him.
The comp for Floyd, I think, is Pernell Whitaker. You know, I mean, same kind of guy, not knocking people out, but, you know, someone who can literally stand in front of the best punchers in the world and they can't lay a glove on him. He can stand directly in front of them and they won't lay a glove on him. So, Senior, great boxing talk. I think Keith is going to be here in the lounge in a minute, so we'll have to pivot to baseball. But before that, we're going to go to break. So on the break, you'll hear about all the other great content we have here at Place to Be Nation, whether you're a wrestling fan, pop culture, sports. There's our other sports show, the Place to Be Nation Extra Point. You know, they're so meaningless, I almost kind of forgot the name there, Senior, you know? So eventually they'll want to face off with us. We're still waiting for it. I heard it was going to be sometime in July now. Scott's still prepping. But yeah, so on the break you'll hear about all the other great stuff, all the other great content at placetobenation.com. When we come back, we'll have Keith the Animal Schmidt, our MLB expert, ready to rock. So, Cowboy out, just for a minute. Just might get some sleep tonight. I ran down to the levee, but the devil caught me there. Took my $20 bill and it vanished in the air. Said, I'm running, but take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself as Scott Criscolo on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews, our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews, and WWE Network live watches. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including The Main Event, featuring a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, WrestleChat.net, Still Real Tales podcast with Jeff Peck, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on what we should be excited about in the world of wrestling today. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, as well as the twice-weekly Bauer Show, The Kings of Sport, featuring live audio wrestling's godfather, Nate Milton, The Sports Lounge, hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Senior, often visited by special guests from inside the world of sports, as well as the NBA Team podcast with Adam Murray and Andrew Reich for the deep dive into the world of pro hoops. As mentioned, all of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN's also the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net for their support.
Chad, do you want your wrestling podcast to be informed by historical and analytical insight and by obsessive watching of footage from any era and any promotion and for them all to be available on one feed?
Sure do, Parv.
Chad, are you ready to shill?
I am, because I know you're talking about the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
Let's go through that again. PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
Got it. That's where you can listen to all sorts of different shows covering the history of pro wrestling in detail.
Shows like Titans of Wrestling with my boys Pete, the man of a 10,000 discs, and Kelly, the jobber lover.
I'm a jobber lover.
Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham.
Join me, Stephen Graham.
The smash hit wrestling game show Brain Buster with
Johnny Sorrow.
We have a host of top contributors like wrestling historian Chris Zellner.
Hello everyone, this is Chris Zellner here, starting a new podcast venture.
And the Pro Wrestling Only admins, the man who knows more about 90s wrestling than maybe anybody on earth, Charles, and good old Will from Texas.
This is Will, and I'm joined today by my good buddy Charles.
Whether it's the territories, WWF, NWA, Mid-South, Texas, Portland, tag team wrestling, Japanese wrestling, lucha, old school, new school, we got it.
And of course, the feed still has the mothership itself,
where the big boys play,
on which we continue our endless journey through WCW Supercards.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. It's pro wrestling only.
You know you want to hear it.
Ever volatile, always lovable baseball expert on the Sports Lounge, Keith Schmidt, entered the building. What's up, Keith?
What's going on, guys? Ready to talk some of the greatest pastime here.
Not deflating footballs, right?
No. My balls are firm.
So, Rob Gronkowski, I just got a little message here on my phone. Rob Gronkowski said in an interview, the only balls that were deflated were D's nuts.
Nice.
So that's I think that probably sums up where Patriots Nation is coming from.
And, yep. There you go.
Yeah. So yeah, good break, senior. You get to hit the can after that boxing talk.
That was great stuff. Yeah, I'm raring to go. This is great being back in the lounge.
Absolutely.
It just got better now that Keith walked in.
Now
we got the old gang is together again.
Yeah, except for Andy.
That's right. Week one is in the lounge crew.
So. Want to talk some baseball? So we were gonna dive into the NBA playoffs, but one senior and a cowboy got going on the boxing. It's my fault, loungers. I'm a big boxing guy, and, you know, I can really, you know, that was speaking from the heart there, and I get a little long-winded. So we're going to skip the NBA playoffs, and we're just going to spend the second segment here talking about the first 25 games or so of 2015 baseball season. And first thing I wanted to talk about, if it's all right with you guys, are the surprise, at least for me, the surprise team in the league. I thought they'd be better, but I didn't think they would be doing this. That's your Houston Astros, 18-9, I believe, coming off a 10-game winning streak. Keith, what's your take on the Astros? Are they for real, or is this a mirage? So, you know, real quick, not to answer my own question, but what I want you to talk about is, with that lineup that they have a lot of, like, real streaky, like, all-or-nothing kind of guys. Do you think this was just a hot streak at the beginning of the year, so it makes it look better, or do you think they can sustain it?
I think offensively, they still haven't even hit their stride. Like you said, they're all streaky. And, you know, you get Gattis going for a little while, and Springer goes cold, and then Connor hasn't started hitting yet. If they ever put it all together, all at once, they'll score 10 runs a game. We predicted they'd lead the league in home runs. That's coming true. And also strikeouts. That might end up biting them when they start facing better pitching. But I offensively, I think they can definitely keep that up. Dallas Keuchel looks like a solid number one ace all the way. I think he leads the league in ERA and whip. Great pitcher. Colin McHugh blossoming into a very good number two. 3, 4, and 5, I don't know if they can keep it up. But they are scoring a shit ton of runs, so I definitely think they can stay in the hunt. And if they have kids in the minors that can still come up and help. So
Correa, right? He's their biggest prospect.
Yeah, he was the number one pick, I believe, 2012 or 2013. And he is just annihilating Double A right now. He's got 6 homers, 13 steals, 28 RBI. He's batting like 400. So it might not be too long before he's promoted.
And then they have Appel as well, right? In the in the farm system.
He was also a number one overall pick, and he's in Triple A right now. He's pitching pretty well. So I'd probably say you'll see him after that Super Two status stuff wears off. You know, after June. But, yeah, I would say he'd probably be in a rotation later on this year. But the bullpen's a lot better than I thought they were going to be. Gregerson seems to be pretty solid at closer. Was it Fields that they've set up guy? They're playing pretty well. I really like that team. They're a hell of a lot further along than I thought they were going to be this year. I knew they'd be better, but not this good, this fast.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's... You know, the Keuchel McHugh combo, I mean, they're looking like legit 1-2. I think, you know, Keuchel was kind of came out of nowhere last year, right? He wasn't a huge prospect or anything, and a lot of people felt like he'd regress this year, but he's kicked it up, I mean, even another notch. And McHugh, I remember when McHugh came up last year, I mean, there was talk of, you know, this guy was getting rocked at AAA, and they brought him up. Remember they brought him up for like a spot start, and for some reason, he could just get major league hitters out, and I mean, he's a good pitcher. And I mean, honestly, Feldman's not a bad three. I mean, he's, you know, if he's your one or two, it's a problem, but he's not a bad three. After that, Carmona, or what's his, Hernandez, Carmona. He's a bum. He's pitched okay, but I don't think he's very good. But that lineup is scary, and Springer. What do you think of Springer, Senior? You think this like I mean, he's got all the tools, but you know, last year what he bat about 220, under 200 this year, strikes out like nobody's business. You think he's one of these guys that'll put it together?
I would think so. I mean, yeah, again, he's a baby. The tools are all there. I mean, the tremendous power and the speed. Thing is, you know, things he has to learn, and maybe he's not, he doesn't have the right examples around him to learn this, but learn that you don't have to try to hit the ball 500 feet every time you're at the plate. I mean, that's why he's striking out so much. I mean, he's swinging to the downs basically every at bat, but when you're surrounded by guys like Gattis and Chris Carter, I mean, it's pretty much what they're doing, you know. But yeah, he's got tools wise, he's got superstar potential. Right now, he hasn't even hit star quality, but it definitely could happen. I agree with what Keith said, that offensively, this team can get better. I mean, Carter's done absolutely nothing. I don't think Addis is batting 200. I know you don't expect him to be an average hitter, but I expect like 250 from Gattis, 260. And I expect, you know, over 200 from Chris Carter. Not what the ridiculous average he's hitting. I don't even know what it is. Okay, I have it in front of me. 146. I mean, if you would have said before the season that Carter would be hitting 146, Springer 192, and Gattis 194. All three of those guys are under 200. And this team's winning. It's pretty amazing. The guys that are carrying the offense, I mean, Altuve's been off the charts. I mean, he's a good hitter, but he's red, red hot. This kid, Jake Marisnik, looks like a player. I mean, he's torn the cover off the ball. Jed Lowry's hit really, really well. So maybe those guys even out a little bit, and Carter and Springer and Gattis start hitting better. That's just a matter of time.
Keith.
Pitching. And again, the top two. The last I saw, I don't know, Keith can probably speak to this, because I think, I don't know what Keuchel did in his last start, but it was his sixth start. And
I know what he did, if you want to know.
Yeah.
He didn't win. Eight innings, one run.
Did the team win?
No.
Because
they
the team
lost
was
2-1.
10-0. When Keuchel and McHugh had started, they each had five starts before that start. The Astros were 10-0. I mean, we know these two guys are going to be real good, but you can't expect that to last.
Keuchel pitched great. I mean, eight innings, one run, and they lost 2-1.
As good as they've been, these are the things that, you know, you can't expect to keep up. You can't expect to win every time those guys pitch. So you got to get something out of the rest of your rotation. But then again, you can't expect those three guys to not bat 200. So you're going to score more, I think. So, you know, I'm eating a little crow on this, because when we made our predictions, I didn't speak too highly of the Astros, and you guys both totally disagreed with me. And neither one of you had them winning the division, which, I mean, it's way too early to say they're going to win the division, but yeah, they certainly look like a better team than I was giving them credit for. I'll totally agree to that. I mean, yeah, they look like they could contend. It's crazy, but they could contend, especially. I mean, Seattle was supposed to be the team, and they're off to a horrible start. So it's really opened the front for them. They built up a big enough lead, and you never know. You just play decent ball, and you can hang on. So, yeah, the Astros are very impressive, no doubt about it. And Altuve, you got a guy right now who would probably win the Cy Young, and you could make a case that Altuve is an MVP candidate. Now, in fact, he could win it the way he's played so far. So to expect those two guys to stay at that high a level is, I don't know. I'm not saying they're not both going to be really good, but Cy Young and MVP, which I think if you voted now, you would have to say they are, is a little over the top.
I think Nelson Cruz might have a little something to say about that.
Yeah.
But
so with Felix Hernandez, but we understand what you're saying, though.
Yeah, I mean, what definitely. The guy, I think he went like nine games in a row that he got multiple hits, a multiple game hitting streak. I mean,
nine, yeah,
unbelievable.
Nine straight games.
So I got
that
a couple,
kid can hit anything.
I got a couple thoughts here, Keith. I want to bounce off you. So I think the loss of Lowry hurts them.
Yeah.
Senior mentioned Lowry, and he was, you know, he's kind of a guy with Altuve balances things out. I mean, he strikes out a little bit too, but I mean, he's not a huge free swinger like these other guys. And he was hitting real well, and he's a good offensive player. So I think the loss of him hurts. As far as Altuve, I think senior thinks he's playing above his head. But I mean, if you look at last year, I mean, he basically did this last year. I mean, what was the stat I saw? He started hitting 330 at, you know, the beginning of June, and never dipped below 330 the whole rest of the season.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
true. Pretty impressive. Yeah.
No, and he's the real deal. I mean, he's
oh yeah,
he's the real deal. And I don't think he's playing over his head. It's not by much. And
likely. Okay.
So that's just a couple of thoughts there. So I think the loss of Lowry hurts, like I said. I agree that McHugh and Keuchel, obviously. I mean, Keuchel's not going to have an ERA under one for the season, but I think they're both good. And they're out to a little bit of a lead. I think they're going to be able to hang in. Obviously injuries you can say that about anybody, but if they lost one of those two pitchers or if they lost Altuve, it would be the end for them, I think. I think those guys are too important. But I think they can contend. What do you think, Keith? Do you agree on the Altuve thing, that this is kind of who he is?
He's quickly becoming one of my favorite players. That kid can hit anything. Anything. He's Vladimir Guerrero, but he's 5'5". That's what he is. He can hit. He doesn't walk. He goes up there swinging. And he had 225 hits last year, and he's well on his way there again this year. I watched a special on him the other day on MLB Network. They went with him back to his home country in Venezuela. They play a game with bottle caps, kind of like stickball, with a broomstick handle, you know, the skinny ones. The pitcher stands about 10 feet back, and they're throwing bottle caps. I mean, you can make that thing dip, dive, slide, and they're crushing this thing. And I'm like, wow, what better way to get, you know, to hone your skills, your hand-eye coordination, than to try to hit that little bottle cap. And I think that seriously helped him develop the skill he has to hit a baseball right now.
Yeah, got a couple of nephews in T-ball right now, senior. Maybe that's the trick right there. We got to bring the broomstick and the bottle cap. Put the bat down, kid. But yeah, no, Keith, that makes sense. And yeah, so like it seems like we're all pretty much in agreement on the Astros. Not everybody thought Seattle was the class of that division. Just saying, but that's
right. Yeah, I did.
I said it was Oakland. And
See, the whole rest of the division is bunched up, you know, within a couple games of each other. It's just the Astros just got off to that amazing start, and they did it all in their division. That's the thing. That whole 10-game winning streak, if I'm not mistaken, most of that was against the West. So that's how they built that big lead. But they're going to come back down to earth. And, you know, there's still 130 games left. But
right, we don't want to.
They'll still be there, you know, towards the end, though, I think.
Don't want to overreact to the small sample size.
No, right.
Speaking of small sample sizes, the next team I want to talk about, you know, if the Astros aren't the surprise of the league, it's definitely the New York Mets.
Mm.
17-10, four games up. What do you think, Keith? You think this is smoke and mirrors?
Not smoke and mirrors. I actually had them in contention for a wild card. I still think Washington is going to walk away with that division when it's said and done, but hey, those guys at the top of the rotation, Harvey, DeGrom, Colon, I can't. Every time I watch that guy, it baffles me. He did it again yesterday. This guy's throwing, like Eckersley says, soft salad up there, 85 to 88. 80% fastballs, and nobody can hit him. He's just dotting the corners. That ball moves. It's amazing watching that guy pitch now. And I'm starting to believe in him. I wrote him off 8 years ago, and he's just proving me wrong year after year after year. But
so Keith,
but he's been great.
When he was in Cleveland, looking fat like he does, and senior, this one's for you too. If I would have told you, was it, say 2003 or 2004, whatever, that 10 years from now he'll be the closest thing to Greg Maddux in his 40s that we've had since Greg Maddux, what would you have said to me?
I would ask you what you were smoking.
But that's what he is, right? I mean, just pinpoint accuracy. You don't really know. I mean, because his stuff isn't overpowering at all anymore, but he just gets it done.
Yep.
And he's become this really super popular figure, too. You know, everybody loves him, the old fat guy, you know, and the ageless wonder. They love watching him hit and run the bases. It's anything he does, he's
he's turned into this, like, the most likable guy in the world, which, hey, you know, it's an amazing thing. But, yeah, if he continues to be a really good pitcher, then that's going to be tough, no doubt about it. I mean,
yep.
Pitching wins championships.
And they're doing all this without arguably the best lineup, best hitter out of their lineup, David Wright, who went down,
right. What,
April 14th or 15th?
Yep.
So, and, I mean, when he comes back, the lineup's going to get that much tougher to pitch to. And they don't give up many runs. So, yeah, and Noah Syndergaard is chomping at the bit to come up to the majors. And for everything that I've read about this kid, he's the real deal. So they're going to add another great arm to that rotation.
Hopefully that works out better than Kendall Graveman.
Oh, God, was I wrong about that? Holy shnike. You know, every time that guy gave up a hit, I sat there and thought about the last podcast and said, wow. I said that was going to be known as the Kendall Graveman trade.
That's a direct quote. Woo! Yep.
Yep.
Have to
Boy, was
it.
I wrong, yeah.
Hey, but I'm just going to say it once, Keith. That was it. I just had to get it in just so you know I listen when you're talking. That's it.
Yeah. Well, He's still young. He's got a ways to go.
He's looked like, like the second coming of Alan Webster. That's about what he's reminded me of. What do you guys think of Ligaris? Juan Ligaris. I like him a lot.
Definitely gold glove center fielder. And his bat is starting to come around, too. So
that was a good signing for them out there. I mean, he really makes some plays. I mean, that's especially for a team that relies on pitching, having that just ridiculous center fielder really helps. You know, it's good stuff. But I'm with you, Keith. I think the Nationals. I think the talent's just going to win out. Although Strasburg, I don't know what is going on with him. You know, he's either terrible or he's injured.
He's injured and didn't look good last night.
They said it was cramps.
No.
Yeah.
Well, he can't help but worry.
Yeah.
He had irritation behind his shoulder blade, and they worked him up with a chiropractor today, and after today's game, he was playing catch in the outfield. So, and he wasn't doing that whole grimace thing he was doing yesterday.
But he hasn't pitched well, even when he hasn't been hurt, you know?
No.
And I mean, I think I said this about Harper at the beginning of the year, so you could make me eat crow on that one after the three home runs today. But, Strasburg's another guy who's a lot of sizzle, but I mean, he's been productive, but he hasn't really been that ace, right? Been that true number one since he's been in the league. We keep waiting for it. And I mean, I felt like he regressed a little bit last year, and he could be regressing a little bit more now. And if he's a B starter instead of an A, Gio Gonzalez, I think, is taking a little bit of a step back as he's gotten older. That unbelievable rotation. You see some kinks in the armor there. What do you think, Senior?
Yeah. I mean, especially, I don't know. They're saying this is no big deal with Strasburg, and if it was anybody else, okay. But I'm sorry, but with him, I worry. You know, with his injury history and Tommy John and everything else, you see him showing discomfort and not throwing well. To me, it's a little bit of a red flag. And basically, they need that pitching rotation to be real good. I'm not saying they're a bad offensive team, but they're not a team that's going to be carried by their offense. So if they show some chinks in the armor in the pitching rotation, maybe they're not going to walk away with the division. You know, even though we didn't think that there was any really strong, really super strong team challenger, but maybe the Mets are better than we thought. I don't know. You know, that's a tough call. I mean, if that rotation's healthy, they should be fine. But that's the one thing that could derail the rotation would be health issues.
What do you think, Keith? Was I off I off base there?
Not completely with Strasburg, but Gio, I don't know about a step back. And, you know, Fister's got a 2-6-1. Tanner Roark is in the bullpen right now. I think he was a 15-game winner last year. They can afford to lose
one of these starters and still not be that damaged by it. Zimmerman looked rough his first few starts, but he's been coming around lately. I don't know. I still see him walking away, and I think their lineup is probably the best lineup in that division. And when Anthony Rendon comes back, they're going to be that much better.
The Marlins have a good lineup, I still see them. I think the Marlins.
No, they don't.
You don't think so?
No way. No way. They have the best hitter. You know, if you wanted to hand pick who's the best hitter,
Giancarlo
Stanton. But top to bottom, no way.
Gordon, Prado, Ozuna. Not an Ozuna guy.
Yelich.
Yelich is hurt.
Desmond.
Which hurts them.
You got Span, you got Desmond, you got the catcher, Wilson Ramos, you got Jason Wirth. Their fourth outfielder, Michael Taylor, could put up solid numbers if he played every day. Bryce Harper's coming into his own now. Leads the league in walks, hit three more bombs today.
Yeah, he's got
8 home runs already. Well, and you know, I heard something today, or read it on Twitter. Bryce Harper is younger than the rookie of the year from 2013, 14, and any rookie this year. He's still younger than they are.
Yeah, I mean, he's like 3 years younger than Springer. Right? Springer's 25, I think.
He's still a baby. He's still 22 years old. So, you know, he's just getting a lot better. I just think that lineup is still pretty tough, top to bottom.
So, we're not going to go and make predictions again because that's silly.
Nah. We've already done that.
We have. Next up, I want to talk about the AL East, led by the Yankees. So we had a try to put your unbiased hats on here, guys. So I was on the Kevin Kelly show, graciously brought on to talk Mayweather Pacquiao, and we ended up talking a little baseball. Two questions. I'm going to ask both of you guys, okay? I want both of your answers. Two questions. One, Alex Rodriguez, what are your feelings on him this year, okay? So not so much like, how he's obviously performed very well. How do you feel about that, okay? Two, how do you feel about the Yankees publicly stating they're not going to pay him the $6 million bucks for catching Mays? So I'm going to start with Keith. So Keith, go ahead.
I think the guy is public perception of him will never ever be the same. I think it's a shame because he's one of the greatest players I've ever seen play. Hitters and defensively when he was younger. The 660, I saw it. I couldn't, other than 15-second little snippet of he just beat Willie Mays. There was nothing on the scoreboard about it. There was no, obviously he was in Fenway, wasn't getting a standing ovation, but it was like just any other home run. It was more about the fact that it put the Yankees in the lead that game. And then the Yankees coming out and saying that, I mean, hey, you signed them to the contract. You put it in there. Well, I think they should pay him. The guy, he paid his penalty. He missed a whole year. Those other incentives, the catching Babe Ruth, possibly catching Hank Aaron, he'll never achieve that now because he missed that entire season. So, I mean, he passed Willie Mays. You put it in the contract, they should pay him. That's how I feel.
Same question, Senior.
Yeah, we're talking about his public image, around the rest of baseball, everybody still hates him. But you know what? They hated him before. But all of a sudden, he's Mr. Popular in New York again with a lot of the Yankee fans. I mean, they're loving him. They're loving him over there. He is getting big ovations over there. And I totally agree that they should pay him. Their reasoning is that they can't market him setting this record anymore like they could have before. Well, maybe you can't market it as well as you could have before nationally, but they could certainly market it in their home, for their home media. They could honor him over there. They could sell souvenirs about it and everything else, and the Yankee fans would buy it. this is an organization that knows how to milk every dollar out of anything. And they're saying that there's no way, in any way, shape, or form, that they can market A-Rod, Britt passing Willie Mays, baloney. I don't buy it. You know, their image should take a hit, that they're coming across looking like a bunch of cheapos trying to get out of this. They don't have any problem with having him out there playing, helping them win games. But they're not going to give him something that they signed him to. And you know what? What is it? I think it's $6 million was the bonus he was supposed to get. In this day, for a multi, who knows, billion-dollar organization like the Yankees, I think it's stupid of him, too, because why would you want to piss the guy off?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, and things are going well. I mean, A-Rod's personality, you know. If you got him positive and being happy, I think A-Rod's better. You know, he desperately wants to be liked. He's always wanted that. He's always wanted acceptance. If I'm in that Yankee organization, I'm paying him, I'm honoring him, and I'm selling some kind of trinkets at the stadium honoring this achievement. If for nothing else, it's worth the $6 million to make him feel good, because in him feeling good, he's probably going to be even more productive than if you have him. Do you want him to be distracted by having to file some kind of a lawsuit to get the money that you guys owed him? I think the Yankees are dropping the ball on this one.
So, Senior, one piece of the question I wanted, I wanted you to answer. It was a very analytical answer. Personally, how do you feel about the way the guy's played this year? He's played well. How does that sit with you?
Hey, what can I say? In all honesty, he served his penalty. I would assume that he's being tested by God. You know, they have random testing. Guys that have red flags, you would think are being tested more than anybody else. If he doesn't fail a test, what can we say? We can say we have suspicion. Yankee fans say they have suspicion about Big Poppy. But, if they test him and he doesn't fail any tests and he keeps hitting, how can I say I have a problem with it? You know, I can't say I like it, but I don't like any Yankee doing well. I don't like
There we go.
Right now, you wear that pinstripe uniform, I don't like it. I don't like Teixeira suddenly hitting all kind of home runs. And we can all say we're suspicious, but we can say that about anybody. You know, anytime someone does good now in baseball, we're suspicious of PED, especially if a guy has it. But they're supposedly taking care of that sort of thing. They're supposedly testing. So until he tests positive and gets suspended again, there's nothing we can say about it. We can say we hate him because he's a Yankee. But the fact that he's come back from over a year of not playing baseball, of not seeing live major league pitching, live action, and has come out and has looked as good at the plate as he's looked, is really, really a tribute to the ball player that he is. Because all of the experts were saying this isn't going to go well. Even the Yankees thought he might not make the team. You know, he's coming into camp. He's got to fight for playing time. We may try to DH him, and people thought, he's not even going to survive there as the DH. Now he's playing some third base. And, yeah, he looks good at the plate. It's pretty amazing.
Not all experts, Senior, because there's a guy with us right now who predicted a third 30 home run, said he'd, if he stays healthy the whole season, if he gets to bat all season, he'll fall into 30 home runs. And Keith said that, and we kind of scoffed, but Keith, you're 100% right.
The guy's one of the greatest. He's still one of the greatest home run hitters to ever live. I know it was enhanced, but I always say this: Jeremy Giambi was on steroids too. You still have to have the ability to hit a baseball. They were enhanced, but okay, so, take 150 of them off. He's still got 500 of them.
So here's
he's one of the greatest, But I have one other quick thing to add about that. If the Yankees didn't want to pay him the money, they should have released him. They shouldn't have let him break the record. That's what they should have done with him. Traded him like Josh Hamilton. like the Angels did with Hamill.
We don't want nothing.
We don't want nothing to do with you. We don't want nothing to do with your records. Here you go. You know, but you know, they're saying that, you know, all this stuff. They don't want to do this with them. They don't want to do that with them. But they're batting them third in their lineup every night. Come on.
So
and for the amount that they're already paying them, throw all what's right aside. From their own perspective, the amount of money that he's making and the amount of money this organization brings in, isn't it worth just giving them that $6 million and congratulating them? Happy? Wouldn't you rather? I mean, you've got him signed to this contract. He's going to play for you for a few more years. Aren't you better off with him happy? I mean, it makes no sense to me. From their own, even if they were pissed off about having to do it, from their own selfish perspective of wanting to win, I'd want to keep that guy happy, especially that he's showing he can still do it. So, in fact, he could get better as the season goes on, because when I talked about experts, guys, and when you heard guys talk that have played the game at the major league level, they said it's really going to take him time to be away from the game that long, even if you take BP or whatever, and to be away from live major league pitching from that long, it's really going to take time for him to get it back. And he pulled those guys all wrong. So what he's done so far is pretty amazing. And if I'm Yankee management, I want that guy as happy as possible. If that team's going to win, him playing really well sure helps a lot. You know, him being the real A-Rod, or something close to it, you know, falling into the 30 home runs, as Keith said. There aren't that many 30 home run guys around anymore. I mean, it's a valuable commodity. So why not keep him happy to give him a lousy $6 million bonus? What the heck is that? You know.
So I have some thoughts here. Thanks, guys. Great answers there. Exactly what I was looking for. So maybe I've gone a little soft in my old age with the Yankee hate. I don't know if it's. We don't say the Yankee hate because I really don't like the Yankees at all. But with the individual, I mean, I really, really hated A-Rod. Like, I mean, I remember him knocking the ball out of Bronson Arroyo's hand. I don't think I could ever hate someone as much as I hated him at that moment. but the word for me, watching him, and I think Keith kind of hit on it, and Keith and I are about the same age, and either this guy or Barry Bonds, as sad as it is, either this guy or Barry Bonds they're the best players that we've ever seen. I think, and I don't think you can argue that at all, right? And I mean, I remember A-Rod getting drafted. I remember him getting drafted. I remember having his rookie card, and you know, great. I mean, just immense natural talent. He's like the real life natural, and he's proven it this year with all the stuff Senior said. You know, and hip injuries. I mean, Bo Jackson had a hip injury. Remember what he looked like? You know, I mean, it's hip injuries are no joke. A lot of people just thought he couldn't come back from that period, but to come back and do what he's doing. And the thing that you guys didn't touch on that I'm going to touch on is his attitude. Okay, is from the time, I don't know if the suspension, what that did to him, being away from the game did something to him in that. Since training camp started, right, since spring training started, he's just put his head down and he's played baseball. No bullshit. That doesn't, you know, he's just playing baseball. And I believe in redemption for people. And, you know, the guy clearly cheated, right? And he cheated in an era when everybody cheated. Like Keith said, I mean, you know, Jeremy Giambi, Bobby Estrella, the list goes on and on of guys who pumped their body, who got huge and still couldn't hit. but I mean, I feel like he was justly punished. And to see him coming, I mean, the old A-Rod, this thing, I mean, for what, touching on what Senior said, I mean, you know, at the very, I mean, there would have been some kind of interview, trash in the organization, something, and you haven't heard a peep. He's just putting his head down and playing baseball. And the only word that comes to my mind of that, the feeling I have watching him is I'm proud of him. That's it. I'm proud of the guy for sitting out that season, for coming back. It looks like a different guy. keeping his mouth shut and just hitting the ball, you know? And I mean, it would have been a really shitty way for that career to end if it would have just ended on a year-long suspension for steroids. Because I don't say, I mean, like, I look at, like, what Ryan Braun did, and I think it's quite a bit worse than what A-Rod did. Ryan Braun tried to take down the specimen collector who probably makes $30,000 a year.
Yeah.
You know? And he's not vilified, so... And I mean, if you want to see like what the effects of a guy not taking PEDs, I mean, there. I mean, the guy's a 15 home run hitter all of a sudden, you know. So I'm proud of A-Rod. I really am, and I mean, I wish the guy nothing but the best. Very strong feelings about them not paying him the money. Everything you guys said. So I like Senior's take that it might, you know, you want to keep him happy because you want to win. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it, and I think we can tie it into what you saw today from Bob Kraft, okay? It's not the same situation, but it's similar. And we talked about this earlier, Keith. Bob Kraft wrote a statement completely destroying that report and fully backing Brady, right?
Mm-hmm.
He did. At the end of it, he said, yep, but we're all part of the same league. We're one of the 32 teams, so whatever punishment you're going to dole out, we're going to take. So if you're a guy on another team, you're seeing this guy, Tom Brady, basically, I mean, for lack of a better word, caught red-handed doing something he shouldn't, right? Lying to the media. It doesn't look good. When you see the owner back him like that, does that make you want to go play for that team?
Yeah.
Now, and this is a big deal, a bigger deal in baseball, because the Yankees generally are going to be competing for the biggest free agents with just a couple of other teams, because only a few teams can afford these guys. You see Alex Rodriguez doing stuff that a lot of other people did and didn't get caught. And they leave him pissing in the wind and humiliate him in public over $6 million. And I know that the other players don't like A-Rod. But I think it goes beyond that. I think it's they're hanging a guy out to dry, and it could be any one of a lot of other guys in that same situation. That if the money's the same, I mean, if I'm a player, I think twice about going to an organization that's going to publicly hang me out to dry like that if I get caught doing something dumb.
That's a real good point. That's a real good point. And I hope it does hurt him too.
Yeah, the only thing though with that is money talks. You know,
yeah, but other teams have money too. The money can be similar.
Right? No, no. Well, see, now there you go. If it's similar, if two teams are offering 160, okay, now that comes into play. But if the Yankees are saying we'll give you 200, I'll take the chance they'll hang me off the dry and take
right.
that extra 40 million.
Right, but I mean, it just yeah. I think it's just a bad look. I do, sorry.
No, it is. You're right.
Lincoln, my for those that can hear the squeaking, Lincoln was squeezing his stuffed shark that I got him. So Lincoln the cow dog is going crazy over here. But I really think it's a bad look. And it's nothing that anyone's ever gonna come out and say, because you can't publicly back A-Rod, right, if you're on another team or something.
No.
Well, let's say it is Ryan Braun. You know, Ryan Braun's a free agent. You know, he's a 20 home run, 100 RBI guy now. And, you know, the Red Sox are offering 18 mil a year for 2 years. The Yankees are offering 21 for 2 years. Where's he going to go? You know?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's, I don't know. To me, and like Senior said, it's such a small amount of money. In the grand scheme of things, I mean, it's to say $6 million is a small amount of money, I know sounds crazy, but it really is a drop in the bucket for them. It's literally like me going to the store and buying like a pack of cigarettes, you know, that, you know, they're, and it's the owner, it's Hal, and he's just not, you know, he's not going to cave. He didn't want the guy on the team. He wanted, you know, if he could have avoided that, he tried like hell to avoid that contract and couldn't do it. But a great point by you, Keith, about Josh Hamilton is it's the same situation, right? Yep. The owner, the organization publicly came out against the guy, right? Publicly came out against the guy. But they didn't keep him around, you know? They ate three-quarters of the contract and shipped him off for nothing, you know? Here, if you pay eight of this $25 million, Texas, you can have him. And the Yankees publicly castrate the guy and keep him, and then do it again during the season when he's playing good. Like, it's just, I don't know. And I mean, it just doesn't. It's just a really, really unsavvy. I feel very strongly about this, that they're digging themselves a little bit of a hole there.
I'm happy to get down.
So with that said, do you guys? I look at that roster, and I mean, they're going to need A-Rod to continue to do what he's doing. They're going to need Teixeira, who, honestly, I'm more surprised by what he's done than what A-Rod's done.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll keep up. I mean, I think he's damaged goods at this point, and he is going to break down. Tanaka, you don't know if he's going to be back, honestly. Could be. The division is just bad. The AL East, I think, is the worst division in baseball. There's just a bunch of mediocrity, and every team has a fatal flaw. Like if you took the Red Sox and the Red Sox hitters and put them with Tampa's pitchers, you'd have the best team in baseball. Right?
Yep.
But
yep.
There's just, I mean, I find this division so tough to predict. I have no idea. I truly don't think the Yankees will win it. That's one thing I know. What do you guys think?
I think it's going to be five teams in the race right to the end. I really think this is the way it started, and this is, the last place team's three or four games out. 2 weeks later, the last place team can be the first place team. Every team is flawed. The majority, besides Tampa, the other four teams' pitching is extremely suspect. All four of them. What the one strength the Yankees have in their pitching is the two guys at the back end of the bullpen.
Very good. Yeah.
But their starting rotation is nothing to speak of, and I don't know if their offense will hold up either. They got the two really good table setters, but there's just a lot of question marks in that lineup. You know, you look at the Blue Jays, the pitching's terrible, but you line up that wherever they bat them, 2-3-4 or 3-4-5 when, Batista's healthy again of Donaldson and Encarnacion and Batista, and that's just as awesome a three-man combination as you're going to see, but they have no pitching. The division is completely up for grabs. It might be who does the best thing at the trade deadline, who can tweak and cure their flaws better, who stays the healthiest. Who knows who's going to win this division? It's pretty much unpredictable. What do you think, Keith?
I agree with you. I think I even said that when we did the predictions for this division, it's no one will be double digits out at the end of the year. This division will be real tight all the way through, and probably whoever stays the healthiest, that's probably who's going to win, or who wins at the trade deadline, like you said, Rod. That's what it is. I mean, the Yankees, yeah, all right, their offense might come back to earth a little. But I still think they can compete. They're still going to put up runs. A-Rod and Teixeira, they might both hit 200, but they're both going to hit close to 30 home runs if they're healthy. You know, Teixeira is still a home run hitter, too. I mean, it seems to me when he comes up now, he's swinging for the fences. And if he continues to do that, like I said, he'll hit 200, but he'll still pop 25 to 30, no problem. Ellsbury and Gardner are great at the top. Chris Young's been a big surprise for them. But he's a very streaky hitter. I remember him in Arizona. He'd go nuts for 2 months, and then you wouldn't hear from him again. McCann seems all right. Headley is what he is. He's decent, great glove guy, but his bat is not what it was in San Diego that one year.
Nothing suspect about that. the
one guy, Carlos Beltran, he disappeared.
he looks completely lost. Now, maybe it's just an early season slump, but he does not look like the same player at all.
He's old, man. He's old.
I know he is, but I mean, he looks like he is like completely lost. I watched an at bat last night with him. It was a 2-0 fastball, center cut about 93 miles an hour. He swung, he barreled it up, and it didn't even hit the warning track. I mean, I think he's done, cooked.
So one of the things that's you know, a little underrated for the Yankees that really helps them was brought up to me by a good friend of mine who's a Yankee fan, who I'm sure you guys can guess who that is. Is they were really hamstrung by having to bat Jeter in the two hole all year last year, and sliding Gardner. Having Gardner and Ellsbury at the top of the order is huge. And I completely agree. Yep. I completely agree with that. And what do you guys think about that? You agree with that, Keith?
Absolutely. Speed kills, man. You get those guys on base, they wreak havoc.
Yeah, plus they can both hit. I mean, they're both good hands.
Right. Yep.
It's not like Billy Hamilton speed where, you know, the guys, they're going to bat 200.
No, yeah, these guys, they're both batting over 300. And they both have surprising pop. I mean, Ellsbury, we know he had power. We saw it here in Boston. But Brett Gardner, I'm surprised with that guy's power. He's a legit 15-20 home run guy.
So we're going to, you know, obligatory, because we're here on the Sports Lounge, and Sports Lounge is in the Northeast. I think most of our good percentage of our listeners are in the Northeast. We're going to talk some Red Sox.
Mm.
So Hanley going to be okay, Keith?
From everything I'm reading, it's, I guess he just really bruised it up pretty well.
So they need him.
His range of motion is getting better. He says he's going to be back in a couple days, so. If he's out, they're going to be in trouble. Because obviously, 10 home runs, 22 RBI, where's that coming from?
So
Napoli looks lost.
I actually went to Fenway a week ago today, which was the Porcello versus Dickey. I bought a Hanley shirtsy, because I don't want to spend the $150 on the actual jersey, so just the T-shirt with the number and the name in the back. And he hit a 3-run home run that I think is still going, so that was nice. And the shirtsy I bought last year was Cespedes, so this one's hopefully this one works out better.
Yeah, I hope so.
So Porcello, two good starts in a row, promising, right?
Yeah.
You got anything else good to say about the pitching staff?
Porcello had two good starts in a row. That's about that. Clay Buchholz, I'm done with that guy. He does not have the mental makeup to be a good pitcher in the major leagues. If everything's going well, he's fine. As soon as Hanley crashed into the wall and they had to review that play the other night and it was called safe, it was like he didn't know where he was anymore. All of a sudden, his pitches got flat right down the middle, and a Longoria double, another double. You gotta be kidding me, man. The guy, he doesn't have the mental makeup to get past an error behind him or a bad strike call or something. I'm sick of that guy. He's done. I think they should put that guy in the bullpen or trade him.
So you don't think he's not the guy you'd want out there in like a game 7 kind of situation?
Jeez, no. I want that guy in mop-up duty, and that's it.
Yeah, unfortunately, they don't have a lot of other options.
Well, they do, though. In the minors, I think the pitchers in the minor leagues are doing better than the guys in the majors.
So outside of Porcello, the other four starters, all ERAs over 5.
Mm-hmm.
Porcello is at 4.38. That's the ace. Do you think things are going to get better? I mean, Justin Masterson, I mean, he was really, really, like, this is what scared me about the rotation at the beginning of the year. I mean, I don't like the idea of just grouping together a bunch of number 4 starters and and that's your rotation. But for a good part of last year, Masterson and Buchholz were probably the two worst regular starting pitchers in Major League Baseball. I'm not exaggerating. Guys that would continually get the ball every fifth day, right? I mean,
yep.
So to put them on the same rotation, I mean, it doesn't seem like things are getting better.
No. The thing with Buchholz, I mean, he's flashed brilliance in the past. We've seen it. You know, the guy can just flat out dominate a lineup at times. But opening day, he looked great. 7 innings, 10 strikeouts. Stymied the Phillies. They had no, they couldn't touch him. Then he comes out and against the Yankees gives us what, 10 runs.
Head case, like Matheson, you said.
Matheson's actually been more. You know what you're getting from him. You know, you already know you're going to get 5 or 6 innings. He's going to give up 4 runs. Deal with it. He's an innings eating number 5 pitcher. That's what he is. I think I still have a little hope in Wade Miley.
I agree with that.
I think he can be a decent number 4. But Joe Kelly, that guy's frustrating to watch, man. He's got nasty stuff.
It's terrible.
But it's like, you know, I watched the Sunday night game. Kurt Schilling was in the booth. And I agree with him 100%. And I'd love to see the numbers on this. He said, this guy's throwing gas with that four-seamer. It's 97 miles an hour. They can't touch it. They're following it off. That's all they can do with it. And then he does the batter a favor and throws him a two-seamer that comes in at 93, and it doesn't move that much. Scrap that pitch. Get that pitch out of your repertoire. All the hits he gave up, all the hard-hit balls were off his two-seam fastball. I would love to see the numbers, the batting average against those two pitches, because I guarantee you it's like in the 100s against the four-seamer and high 300s against that two-seamer. Maybe Schilling needs to be the pitching coach.
Senior.
Yeah.
What's your take on the Sox? You're usually the eternal optimist here. To me, I mean, they've given up the most runs in Major League Baseball, right? Am I right about that? I know that was the case as of 2 days ago. I didn't look today.
So the optimistic way to look at that is when you look at all these guys' numbers, when you talked about the ERAs, I'm not saying this is a loaded staff, far from it, but I don't think that is bad either. It's still a small sample size, and I'm not saying they're all going to turn into number ones. I'm saying those ERAs are going to come down. I mean, Porcello was around 3.5 last year. He had a couple of bad starts that inflated it. I think he could very well be a 3.5 pitcher, but we agreed that he was the bright spot. Wade Miley is kind of a low floors guy, and he may have been for the league, but he pitched in a park that was really good to hit in. I think he could be okay. Again, you know, I don't know what we're going to talk about numbers 1 through whatever. I'm just saying he could be better than he's been. Kelly is still young and still could figure it out. What you were saying about all the stuff Schill was saying, At this age, at 27 years old, and I wish I had the numbers in front of me, but it was pointed out to me the other day. It was Lou Maloney who pointed it out on the radio. He gave Kurt Schilling's numbers at exactly Joe Kelly's age. And he was wins, losses, ERA. And he said, whose numbers are those? Because they were talking about Joe Kelly. Sounds like Joe Kelly, right? And then he gave Kelly's numbers, and they were almost identical. So he's got time to figure it out. I mean, and Schilling didn't, and Schilling was where Kelly was numbers wise then, and Schilling didn't have 98 miles an hour in his arsenal. What Schilling learned to do was pinpoint control. And Kelly obviously has a lot of trouble locating the ball still, but you see him when he's on, he's thrown some good, you know, this is where he was with the Cardinals. He was kind of trick or treat, right? When he's on, he's really good. When he's off, he's horrible. He's still got time to figure it out. There's still hope there for Joe Kelly. A guy that can throw the heat that he has, he can. You certainly, we're not ready to give up on him. In fact, he's shown that he can pitch. And he just needs to harness it a little. So there's hope there. And what Keith talked about, you know, we used to always talk about Henry Owens. Well, now it's more than Henry Owens. It's Eduardo Rodriguez. I'm hearing People say he's one of the top four or five pitching prospects in all of minor league baseball. He's close to being ready. It's very possible he could be up before the season's over. You know, so they got a few guys down there that, if all else fails, could step in and probably, you know, do better. If one of these guys is really as bad as what they've been so far, there's hope there. This lineup, if pitching just gets a little better, this lineup is capable of being better than they've been so far this year, too. In fact, I think the lineup's off to a slow start. I expect them to be better. I expect them to score more runs. So the optimistic view, to put it all in a nutshell, is so far they've been about as bad as they can be. And they're like, what, four games out. So in this division, there's reason for optimism, because this team, pitching and hitting-wise, both can be better than they've been. And they're hanging in the way they are. That's clear. There is your pie in the sky. There's your optimistic view. And I do believe that they're going to hang in the race. I don't think anybody in this division is going to walk away from them. I think they're going to have their good streaks. So far this season's been a bad streak. I think they're going to have their good streaks. That lineup's going to get hot and score a lot of runs at some point, and this team will go on some good streaks. And they're going to be right in it at the end. And who knows? They can tweak it at the trade deadline and make a run.
So we like to hear from you, Senior. So just
can I want to
go ahead, Keith.
Just to piggyback a little on what he said about Eddie Rodriguez at some point this year, I think you might see him at some point this month coming up. Him or Brian Johnson. Brian Johnson's down there, and he's ready, and he won't be any worse than what they've been throwing out there now. Honestly, I was dogging on Clay Buchholz. I think you might see maybe a little phantom BL stint so we can try to get his head right and see, give one of them kids from Pawtucket a chance to see what they can do.
Wouldn't surprise me. That would be nice.
So Senior with the he's been so well behaved until the end there. So to just give you the cliff notes, if you missed Senior's little spiel, there is Joe Kelly is Curt Schilling but with better stuff.
No, that's Joe Kelly at 27 years old is exactly what Curt Schilling was numbers-wise at 27 years old. And I'm not saying that definitely follows that he's going to turn into Curt Schilling. That's just telling you that he's a young guy without a lot of experience and he has the gas, he has the stuff, and it's possible that he figures it out. Some guys figure it out at that age.
So the Red Sox would be ecstatic if Joe Kelly topped out at like Giovanni Gallardo. Like, that would be huge, huge victory for the Red Sox.
I'll tell you, you know, if he does fail starting, he could definitely close with that fastball.
Agreed. Yeah. I agree there, Keith. And, you know, there's a long history of that. And Koji is Koji's no spring chicken. So
no.
I think, Keith, you just solved it. You're a savant, Keith, with this stuff. The A-Rod, Joe Kelly, Koji's going to go down. Joe Kelly's going to have 25 saves this year.
Yeah.
So that's going to wrap us up. It's great getting back in the lounge with you guys. You guys enjoy it?
I do.
Yeah, awesome.
So we'll everybody keep watching the next lounge. We'll talk about the NBA playoffs. I can say is, you know, I'm going to show my homerism here, but we love you, Kelly Olynyk. that arm bar would have made Cesar Gracie proud. And let's see how good you are, LeBron. So
if we didn't have venom as Celtics fans for the Cavs before this series, I walked out of the series with a lot of venom for them. You know, people are asking me, who are you pulling for in the playoffs? Now I say anybody but Cleveland.
The LeBron thing, you know. I mean, he's an easy guy not to like. And
is it Cleveland or is it LeBron?
No, it's probably Cleveland. I mean, it like Senior said, it did get chippy.
Yeah.
J.R. Smith, there you go. There's a guy that's easy to have. to totally dislike what he did to Jason Terry a few years ago, and then what he did this year. I mean, he's a piece of garbage. You know? I mean, even Kevin Love, listening to him whine all year long, you know, listening. You know, you want that guy on your team, you go over to a team. Talk about a guy that doesn't know how to handle himself. You go over to a team, you know who the alpha dog is on that team. You know, and you're whining all year. And then to the point you get asked about 80% into the season, you get asked by a reporter, and you know you're going to get quoted on this, who you think the MVP of the league is. Your answer has to be LeBron, and the nitwit says it isn't, you know. That's enough to tell me I'm really glad the Celtics didn't sign that piece of garbage.
Senior, you know he's an unrestricted free agent, and
I know that.
So hopefully what Olynyk did. I'm with you. I think he's we'll go on a quick tangent here, but I think he is your classic best player on a bad team kind of deal.
There you go.
You know, and they put him into the Bosch role, in essence, right? He's playing the Bosch role for Cleveland. And, you know, for all the heat that Bosch took, he grew into that role and became very, very good in that role. And when LeBron was out, he was good. You know, he could be the man. And to your point, you never heard a freaking peep out of him. You know, he was a good teammate. He didn't mind being the third banana. Love clearly didn't fit in as the third banana. You would think he would be like a better fit for the Bosch role than Bosch because he's a better shooter, but inconsistent. And the thing, he really plays no defense. None. I mean, he's the worst defensive power forward in the NBA, and I don't think it's close. So he's the kind of guy that you bring in, and he's, you know, for the Timberwolves, 24-12. But your team's going to win 20 games because he's given up 20-15. Yeah, I'm with you. Let the Lakers have him. They're ready. You know, go back to California. I don't think he fits in very well with Stevens' system, honestly. And I know that the Celts feel like they need, you know, to win in the NBA, you feel like you need that stud. I just don't think he's that guy. I really don't think he's that guy. So,
there's been enough rumors about the interest in a certain player from Sacramento. That would be the star.
He's that guy. Yeah. He's that guy.
There you go.
And he's I think my boogie cousin's love has been well documented. But he is that guy. I think he's just stuck in a shit situation. I don't think it's his fault. And I think he's a guy that, you know, maybe the night-to-night effort could be questioned. I mean, you put him on a team with who I feel is the best coach in the NBA. And I again, given what he did with that Celtics team this year, I don't think it's really that close. Him or Popovich. I mean, you got to always throw Popovich in there. But, you know, you put Boogie into this system with this coach on this team, and you got MVP candidate right away, and they're a top three team in the East. Next year.
There you go. Let him feel the passion in Boston. It's a little different than playing in Sacramento. And I think he'd react really well.
Well, if you watch, I mean, I watched a lot of Sacramento. I mean, I watched, you know, a big NBA. I don't want to say I'm a big NBA guy, but I, you know, watch a lot of NBA games. And he was just more frustrated with the losing. I mean, more than anything. I mean, the guy just doesn't like to lose. When they were winning at the beginning of the year, he was fine. And then, you know, they're losing, he gets pissed off, but he wears the emotion on his sleeve. You know, that's fine. Marcus Smart's like that, too. Marcus Smart had a rep as being a bit of a head case, and he's been fine.
Yeah, I love Marcus.
He's got a little mean streak, you know? It's good.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah.
All right, we're gonna run over time, so we're going to discuss this more next week on The Lounge. Keith, thanks so much for joining. Great stuff as always. Senior, we love you. I'm the Cowboy. I'm out.
Baby, are you ready to lick me sexy? Golf shoes and suck me sexy. Baby, we'll take it and we'll hump me sexy. Freak of the week, are you in the mood to fly to? to the stars with Jackie Mo. When I say love me, you say sexy. Oh, yeah. Love me, sexy. Our zodiac signs are compatible. Clocking that ass from across the room. Your body says sexy. Love me, your mind says sexy. Sexy.
Love me, sexy.
What's been happening? Yeah. Too late now. It's on.